Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers and the co-chair of the Endowment for the Business of Government. We created the Endowment in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. Find out more about the Endowment by visiting us on the web at endowment.pwcglobal.com. The Business of Government Hour features a conversation about management with a government executive who's changing the way government does business. Our conversation this morning is with Beth Slavitt, a member of the Merit Systems Protection Board. Good morning, Beth.
Good morning.
And joining us in our conversation is another PwC partner, Bob Reeve. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
Well, Beth, let's start off by learning more about the board. Could you tell us about its missions and its activities for our listeners?
The board, as established under the Civil Service Reform Act of 1978, has basically two missions. The first mission, for which we are best known, is the adjudication of federal employment personnel cases. Probably what people are most familiar with are adverse actions if someone gets fired or suspended by a manager in the federal government. Ultimately, the decision of whether that is going to be upheld or not is made by the third party, which is the Merit Systems Protection Board, and ultimately by a three-member board. Underneath the three-member board, we have 10 offices, 70 administrative judges throughout the country who decide the cases, sometimes in a hearing, sometimes on the record, depending upon what's appropriate. And then that case can be appealed through a petition for review, usually, to the three-member board. The three-member board is a bipartisan board made up of, depending upon the administration, one Republican, two Democrats, two Republicans, one Democrat, serving 7-year non-renewable terms. The first mission of the agency is to actually for the board to adjudicate cases and the staff of the board to assist in the adjudication cases. The second mission of the board is to ensure and do studies that the merit principles that have been established in the Civil Service Reform Act in Chapter 23 of Title V, incorporated and encouraged in practices throughout the government. So not only do we look at, in individual cases, the insurance of merit principles and the prevention of prohibited personnel practices, but we look through the missions part of the agency, the studies part of the agency, through actual practices within the government, which may or may not ensure the encouragement of merit principles. One of the first things the board has looked at and has looked at periodically throughout the board's tenure, for example, has been the issue of sexual harassment, how much it occurred within the federal government in particular agencies, how great a problem it was, how it was perceived. And so that was one of the studies that we're most famous for, because we basically do it about every 10 years.
How big is the staff of the board?
We have about 240 employees.
How are they divided between the adjudication and the studies?
The mass of our function, the greatest proportion of our function goes to, in terms of FTEs, goes to adjudication. So you have something like 70 administrative judges in the field and their support staffs, which would involve paralegals, administrative officers, clericals there. Then an additional office called the Office of Appeals Counsel, which is made up of between about 35 lawyers and some paralegals, whose job is to advise the board directly on the decisions that come up from the regions. Then we have a function of the office, what we call the Office of Regional Operations, which is now only made up of two people, which tries to coordinate between the organizations and supervise what is done in the field. And then the actual mission of the studies function of the board is about 10 to 14 people, most of whom are research analysts and psychologists who study broadly the overview. So that is a much smaller function, and which I think reflects the goals of the legislation, but is also unfortunately part of the resource issue, which is the need to always move the cases and get out the cases. And the board has an excellent reputation for moving cases expeditiously and fairly. And then the other sections of the board are support are basically supports to those two functions. We have a general counsel's office. The board litigates its own jurisdiction and timeliness cases before the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals. So our Office of General Counsel is heavily involved in that, as well as obviously advising on internal matters and including our congressional affairs. We also have the basic components any organization has of a small personnel office. And that's actually an interesting initiative that was done that I can talk about later. We have a computer support group, and we have a financial administrative management division that provides support for contracting, administrative, leasing, all of those kind of functions. So the bulk of our employees are directly involved in the adjudicatory function.
What about the bipartisan board members? What are their roles?
Under the statute, there are three statutory board members, the chairman, the vice chairman, and the member of the board. And in terms of adjudication, they are all equal. Each board member's vote counts the same as any other board member's vote, and they're total peers and equals in terms of making that decision and act accordingly, like a court. An appellate court. With regard to the overall mission of the agency and the direction it should take, that's the chairman's job. The chairman is the CEO of the board and is responsible for all of the management and administrative functions. With regard to the studies functions that we were talking about, the chairman has more responsibility for directing that, but all of our studies functions are basically, a lot of those studies are proposed, and the career staff has a lot of independence in proposing and determining what the board should look at next, because they've got the continuity and they're the ones who are in touch on a day-to-day, month-to-month, and year-to-year basis on the evolving issues arising in government. And so they will normally propose a series of studies to the three-member board, and we will comment back on what we think is sort of good for the time and what should be focused in on. So an example would be a study that was proposed, and we might narrow the focus and say, we think you're biting off too much to deal with, or let's look at this particular issue. We may never end up seeing, if we leave earlier, the results of those studies, because they're a long-term process.
Let's shift and talk about your career. Tell us about your career before you came to the board.
We were talking earlier, and you were talking about how some people think careers are linear, and I'm probably the person who would say I'm always sort of surprised, because I think I've jumped around to some extent. Before law school, I actually worked in a prison in Massachusetts. It was a co-ed institution of men and women, and I was a work education release counselor and then manager of a pre-release program. Then I went to law school, and coming out, I went into employment law and spent about 4 years working for a small union, federal sector union, the American Federation of Government Employees, Local 1812, which represented at that time the then existing United States Information Agency and represented both civil service and foreign service employees. It was a very exciting time because it was subsequent to the Civil Service Reform Act of 78, and Congress was considering the Foreign Service Act of 1980, which mimicked a lot of the provisions of the Civil Service Act, but not all of them, because the Foreign Service has its own unique issues. And then went into private practice with a firm and represented transit and workers and nurses, continued to represent Foreign Service employees, often very high-level Foreign Service employees, and then continued a practice, and then decided at some point I wanted to do something else, got an offer to work for a congressman from Massachusetts, Chet Atkins, and became his chief of staff and counsel. And then he was defeated for election, and I went from there to work for Senator Kennedy when he was chairman of the then Senate Labor and Human Resources Committee, where I handled all sorts of labor issues and statutes involving employees. And then from there, the Senate changed hands, and I needed to look for a job. And, you know, people, it's always funny when people, you know, introduce me or they ask me how I did. And, you know, I literally looked through the plum book and I said, I can do that. I've done employment law because I had had my own practice for 6 years in this time of practicing law. I actually had my own practice where I represented unions and federal employees and foreign service employees. So I knew the case law. And that's how I ended up at the board.
That's a great stopping point. Come back with us as we continue our discussion with Beth Slavitt of the Merit Systems Protection Board. This is the Business of Government Hour.
How are government agencies recruiting personnel from the private sector? Find out by reading the endowment's latest report by Hal Rainey, entitled A Weapon in the War for Talent, Using Special Authorities to Recruit Crucial Personnel, available at endowment.pwcglobal.com.